A monk was walking along a path, chanting the Heart Sutra. He accidentally kicked a stone, broke his toe, and shouted in pain. As he did so, the line in the Heart Sutra spontaneously came to mind. No body. With this, body and mind dropped away. Please sit comfortably. Let me read that short paragraph again. The monk was walking along a path, chanting the Heart Sutra. He accidentally kicked a stone, broke his toe, and shouted out in pain. As he did so, the line in the Heart Sutra spontaneously came to mind, no body. With this, body and mind dropped away. The related passage from the Heart Sutra is this one. Therefore, in emptiness, there is no form, no sensation, perception, mental reaction, consciousness. No eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind. No color, sound, scent, taste, touch, thought. No seeing, and so on to no thinking. No ignorance, and also no ending of ignorance. And so on. To no old age and death, and also no ending of old age and death. No suffering, cause of suffering, cessation, path, no wisdom, and no attainment. Since there is nothing to attain, the Bodhisattva lives by prajna paramita, with no hindrance in the mind, no hindrance and therefore no fear, far beyond delusive thinking. Right here is nirvana. I couldn't find the source of the story of the monk, so I paraphrased from my recollection. The aspect I want to highlight today is the first line. A monk was walking along a path, chanting the Heart Sutra. I find inspiration here for our lay practice. In this instance, the dropping away of body and mind did not occur while facing the wall for 10 years, or even in dialogue with one of our esteemed ancestors. He was walking along a path as we do every day of our lives, lay or monastic. He may also have faced the wall for 10 years, but that was not part of the story and could be a different topic. Nevertheless, the dropping away of body and mind was not entirely random. It sprung from fertile and well-tended soil. He was chanting the Heart Sutra as he walked. It need not have been the Heart Sutra, though. It would do if he or we are engaged in any practice, bringing attention to what is, without the thought of either attention or one who attends. That is, walking along with no hindrance in the mind. What is important here is the persistent engagement of attention. Attention that was the preparation that set up the story of walking, pain, and falling away. That is a story of practice that does not require distinctions of lay, monastic, residential, non-residential retreat, chant, walk, cook, wash. Attentive and not, here is that belligerent work colleague, this family conflict, and the unique arrangement of clouds in the sky. And again, here is this precisely arranged sky of clouds. There are fundamental and practical aspects of being with no hindrance in the mind, and no body remains. Before continuing, I want to assure we don't get distracted by the seemingly mystical words, dropping away of body and mind, and no body remains. I won't further distract by using words pointing a similar direction that are also used within our tradition. You know them anyway. Please don't look outside your life to find reference to these words. Last month, I happened to hear an old Leon Russell song, Song for You. that included one line. I love you in a place where there is no space and time. If those words bring a moment of your life to mind, perhaps you can renew the spirit of it when lover and one love disappeared, before and after disappeared, and only love remained. Or a time when laughing heartily had thrown back all thoughts of laughter, and when laughing disappeared, and only laughter filled the world. In that moment, there is no laughter, no end of laughter, and no one laughing. We could say the same for crying, head forward in one's hands. No tears, no end of tears, and no one to shed tears. No hindrance in the mind, yet there are tears, and there is head in hands. Joni Mitchell gives us a bookend of Leon Russell's lyrics. In her song, Comes Love. Come a fire, firemen come and rescue me. Blow a tire, you can patch the inner tube. Comes love, nothing can be done. Don't try hiding, because it ain't any use. It just starts sliding and your heart turns on the juice. But Mitchell also sings of love beyond space and time. But in this instance, with a blues tone, the line, don't try hiding, is itself an encouragement to practice and is widely applicable, even when what is present is unappealing, intolerable, or just dumb. At such times we want to separate ourselves. What a disappointment it can be that Zen does not end suffering the way we sometimes wish. In our way, independent of categories of practice, we bring intention that fosters the falling away of practice, the falling away of one who would practice, one who sits, drives, reads, gardens, works. As travelers of the way, our attention contends with the demands of sustenance and interactions. And so the times like this of simple quiet, without interactions, are precious. We can find encouragement in Dogen's words in actualizing the fundamental point. To study the Buddha way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be enlightened by the myriad dharmas. To be enlightened by the myriad dharmas is to bring about the dropping away of body and mind, of both oneself and others. The traces of enlightenment come to an end, and this traceless enlightenment is continued endlessly. When one starts to search out the Dharma, one separates oneself far from the Dharma. When the Dharma has already been rightly transmitted in oneself, just then one is immediately one's original self. This passage is often quoted and, to my view, could not possibly be overused. In fact, why not carry it as you walk the path each day? To forget the self is to be enlightened by the myriad dharmas, is a monk's story of kicking the stone. To be available to the myriad dharmas, the stone, that belligerent work colleague, family conflict, and seeing the exactly arranged clouds in the sky is the way itself. Available or not, body and mind are already gone. If you're unsure about that, see, hear. What I regularly hear about in the interview room and experience in my own life is the challenge of fostering that availability. Fostering attention requires our intention. Not rigidly, or requiring a furrowed brow, though there are times for that too. The koan of our way is then first caring the question, how do I bring attention and intention to this activity, to this room now? There's a passage at the end of a poem by Robert Frost that goes like this. And were an epitaph to be my story, I'd have a short one ready for my own. I would have written of me on my stone, I had a lover's quarrel with the world. Our attention can be diffused by what we perceive as necessary concerns. All fine, unless we are quarreling with Dao. What's the point of that? To listen fully, even now, for me to speak with engagement now, requires we set down concerns of understanding and being understood, so that you can truly listen and I can open up and speak. Perhaps we carry a quarreling aspect of concerns about important things, like illnesses of oneself or a beloved friend or family member. It can seem insurmountable to let grief and dread take care of themselves without our preoccupation. And increasingly, it requires setting down our wrestling against the current fact of this very troubled world. Doing so, that is the putting down, does not imply either the dismissal of the importance of those concerns or the need to address them in their time. But how about now, as you listen and I speak? That final line, I had a lover's quarrel with the world, was etched into his gravestone after he died. We can perceive the release of those concerns like putting down our protective armor, opening heart and mind to all that is here now, all of it, leaving nothing out. It requires of us a faith in ourselves that we will act accordingly when it is time to address a concern. But what is called for now? Setting down is not about technique. We all know what to do. It is about persistence and focus without one who focuses, and focus without differentiation of whether or not there is one who focuses. It is action without actor or question about actor or no actor. Breath breathes. That is, the breathing happens whether one has thought about managing or attending the breath or not. No self is in part the utter release of the idea of a breather, such that only a breath is left. It is giving up watchfulness, giving up doing it right, and simply doing. To just listen, to just walk in, just drive, type, and make decisions is to be naked before the vagaries of life. Take that chance and see what happens. Just as you release all to laugh, release all in this activity, whenever it occurs to you. Doing so includes acceptance of our responsibilities and the limits of our authority. Doing so, I find, also includes the freedom from attempts to control that which is not in my control. At a farmer's market recently, I watched as a girl, maybe 5 years old, was at the counter of a booth, waiting for a pastry to be given to her. Her eyes were wide, fixed on the pastry. Her tongue was wandering outside her lips with a mind of its own. Her waiting was beyond space and time. There is no time, no activity in which this immersive attention could not be applied. There are, of course, sometimes in activities we perceive more natural to our focus than others. This brings me back to the koan. How do I bring attention and intention to this activity now? Our session supports us through the day. On our own, we pick it up, engrossed when brushing teeth first thing in the morning and again at night. At my house, to walk out of my door in the morning, birds surprise me with their songs. Mountains too surprise me, jumping into my view without warning. The sound of an airplane, the chortling of my electric teapot. What is there for you when wrapped? The three bells ending a period are a novel creation. Attention can also include intentionally setting everything down and recognizing breath, listening, move. This intention, fostered by persistence, can be free from connection to any ritual or time and actualized whenever it occurs to us. Moment to moment, this is Zen. Singer-songwriter Kev Moe put it like this in one of his songs. "Well, it might sound bad or it might sound good, might be made of steel or it might be made of wood. Maybe it's just news on your television, or it might be God trying to get your attention." For all of us, there are periods in which we are persistent and can appreciate the experience of it. And there are periods when we forget and can become disillusioned, demoralized, that this path will ever get us anywhere out of the weeds. Inevitably, there are seemingly interminable days when the way is dull, colorless. Perhaps one's boredom can be encouragement toward a new beginning, necessitating giving up completely. Starting with, "I don't know anything. I don't know how to do this. I expect nothing. There was a reason I started this practice, but what about now?" What were those first instructions again? From here, we can take Kev Moe at his word. "Even this boredom, dispiritedness, is my true home. Even my vague, cranky dissatisfaction is my true home. The agha we utter with the alarm after a poor night's sleep is God. It is one of the myriad things trying to get my attention. Giving up all things, this thing, nowhere other than home." Take up the koan again with new curiosity, attention. Perhaps it is with persistence along the same path, and perhaps there is a possible shift in form or attitude. Have I become rigid in my mind? Do I have expectations of myself such that I'm no longer creatively just opening eyes to see, ears to hear? There is no doing this well and no doing this poorly. There's only this chance for surprise. Thank you.